You're listening to an extended interview from the Jazz FM Business Breakfast. A version of this was first broadcast on Tuesday, the 13th of June, 2017. I'm Nick Howard. With an election Theresa May was hoping would give her a bigger mandate for Brexit, ending in a hung parliament, the question of what Brexit means is back on the table. Overnight, the Prime Minister told Tory backbenchers she got us into this mess and that she is the one to get them out. But what does that mean for the rest of us and for the Brexit negotiations, which were scheduled to begin next Monday? I asked Ian Dunt, who's editor of politics.co.uk and the author of Brexit, What the Hell Happens Now?, if the election really changes anything.
Yeah, it does. I mean, the key to it, to me, is this, is Theresa May says she wants to leave the single market and the customs union, and also that she wants to approach Brexit in a certain way. You know, we've seen for a year she's quite aggressive, she's quite cold. It's a pretty tough message she's been sending to the Europeans and back at home against critics of Brexit, you know, this crush the saboteurs stuff. She then says, I want a mandate for my plan. She doesn't give a lot of details of her plan, but we know what we know of her. And she did not get that mandate. And that, to me, is the core fact of this referendum. She didn't get the mandate. And that basically opens up a host of new opportunities to talk about Brexit. So, yes, some of that is about single market and customs union and those sort of outcomes. Another part of that is just to say, what are our priorities going in? Rather than thinking about the outcome, do we care more about immigration or do we care more about jobs and the economy? And another one is to say, maybe the only change we want is a change in manner, you know, to be less tough with the Europeans, to not really treat them as our enemies, but treat them as, you know, friends who we're going to have a friendly sort of chat with and go our separate ways, but in a way that, you know, ends up with a solution that we can all live with. And all of that stuff is now back on the table, and it's back on the table because she did not get the mandate that she asked for.
Now, the actual Brexit team that will be doing this, so people like David Davis, the Brexit Secretary, they're all still the same people. Are you optimistic that they are capable of that kind of mood change?
No, not really. I'm not particularly optimistic as to any of their capabilities. Certainly Boris Johnson never really seems to understand what he's talking about with the EU. He's constantly saying things which are simply legally impossible to do and has always been doing that. And he's been shuffled on off to the Foreign Office. Doesn't really have much to do with it. Liam Fox, who's the second member of that sort of Three Musketeers trio, spent the first part of his time in his job seemingly unaware that it was illegal for him to conduct it. It's not allowed that an EU member state conducts bilateral trade negotiations with third parties. He spent months seemingly unaware that this was the case, then quietly admitted it was the case. And in the rest of the time, has really not accomplished much. In fact, sort of big, large economies like India and America, who seemed interested in the trade deal at the beginning, now seem much less interested in it under his tenure. So he's not particularly impressive. Then there's David Davis, the Brexit Secretary, who is by far the most competent and most interesting of the bunch, including Theresa May, who does seem to fully understand the issues. And he's been playing some very weird games. I mean, on election night at about 2:30, he said, our plan involves leaving the single market and the customs union. Today, we will find out if the public support that plan. Then we fast forward to this morning on the Today programme, where he was saying, well, we're not going to change the plan at all and everything is continuing as it was before, despite the fact that, you know, according to his own test, the public had said they didn't support that plan. So he is a much more mercurial figure. Some people think he's a true believer, that he'll always want a quite hard Brexit. Some people think he's more reasonable than that. But whichever interpretation you put on it, he is the one that seems to have the firmer grip on the issues and seems to more than the others understand a little bit more of what he's talking about. But again, even in his case, there seems to be no change in his position.
How much of that do you put down to the lack of pressure from Labour? Because, of course, Labour had a good night on Thursday into Friday, although obviously they didn't win a majority. But they have been pushing for a hard Brexit as well. They want to leave the single market, freedom of movement and the customs union. There isn't a vast difference between their manifesto pledges to the Conservatives.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? You're quite right. That's exactly what was in the manifesto. But the actual Labour position is more complicated than that and is very, very hard to pin down. I mean, you may remember at the beginning of the campaign, Keir Starmer, the shadow Brexit secretary, made a speech where he didn't really say we were leaving the single market. What he said was, we're going to prioritise reforming freedom of movement. And what we're going to do is go in there. Freedom of movement is a core component of single market membership. So we're going to go in there, you know, the cost of leaving the single market, some people put it at about 36 billion a year to this country. It would, you know, eradicate probably hundreds of thousands of jobs is the expectation of most economists. So the Starmer position is, look, we're Labour. We can't allow manufacturing, agriculture to get hit in this way. We can't allow these people to lose their jobs. We've got to go in there, try to negotiate a reform of freedom of movement. Maybe that would be, you can come over if you've got a job offer. Maybe it would just be a 7-year emergency break, something like that. And if we fail, then we'll leave the single market. Now, that's a different position to the one that Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell seems to have. And yet we're starting to see there's more moderate Labour MPs come up now and go for that Starmer position of let's try to reform free movement and stay, rather than the John McDonnell position, which is, look, we're definitely leaving the single markets. It's very, very hard to actually be certain of what Labour's position is. I can't criticise them too much for that, because at the moment, the Conservative Party are having exactly the same debates between the people in the centre of the party and the people on the right of the party. The big irony is that it's the right of the Tory party and the left of the Labour Party who actually have the most unity on this issue. For their own various reasons, they've ended up with the same policy, and it's the centre of both parties that are increasingly wary of that proposition.
We're told again and again by Labour figures and Conservative figures on, as you say, the sort of the left and the right of the party, but the ones who appear to be driving the bus, for want of a better word at the moment, that Brexit means leaving the single market, leaving the customs union, leaving freedom of movement, and that to do otherwise wouldn't be Brexit. I mean, just as a thought experiment here, is that an actual Brexit? Is there a concept here that's, you know, we can leave the EU but not have those big shifts?
So to me, I think that there is a viable Brexit that keeps you in the single market and keeps you in the customs union. If you look at what someone like Norway does, Norway is not a member of the EU. That means that they don't have to go by the rules on crime. They don't have to go by the rules on justice. They don't have to go by the EU rules on foreign policy. They don't have to go by EU rules on agriculture or on fisheries. They have a lot of freedom. I mean, they get rid of most of the laws that the EU passes. However, they do have to accept, to a large extent, freedom of movement, freedom of goods, freedom of services, and freedom of capital. And there's an advantage to that. It basically means you get to sell things as much as you like. You get an awful lot of money by selling things. This country, UK in particular, has done very, very well in financial services and in telecoms and IT and in transport by having access, by having, you know, full membership of that single market. So there is an avenue to do that. However, it means that you don't have full control of who comes into the country. You don't have full control of your economy. But the thing is, one of the things we need to accept is we never will have full control. The only country in the world that has full control of everything is North Korea. And the way that it does it is by not having any arrangements with any other countries whatsoever. If you go and sign a free trade agreement with another country, what they're going to ask is for some kind of neutral, impartial arbitration service in order to preside over it. And that will be a court. And that court will not be based in your country. It'll be based in a third party country, and it will come to rules that you then need to abide by. There's no such thing as complete sovereignty. All countries make concessions on sovereignty in order to improve their economic standing and in order to trade with other people. We do the same thing when we make goods according to the specifications, let's say on safety or on labor, of the markets in which we're trying to sell them. Again, that's a loss of sovereignty, but you do it because you want to make more money as a country. And if we were to have a grown-up debate about how this went, it would not be about absolutes one way or another. It would be to have, say, look, pragmatically, how much are we willing to give up in order to still have a really good quality of life? And I think that there is a lot of avenue for us to do that inside the single market and the customs union, but outside of the EU, still respecting the referendum result.
If we are still debating these hard Brexit topics, so the what membership of the single market would look like, what oversight from the ECJ would look like, can we at least be assured that the aiming for a no-deal Brexit is off the table? Or do you think that is still a possibility?
I would like to say that it was off the table, but David Davis was talking an extraordinary amount of nonsense this morning, suggesting that, no, you still need to be prepared to walk away. The government position on this is basically you can't do a good negotiation unless you say that you're prepared to walk away. It's wrong, completely wrong. And this is the reason why. It's not just that we wouldn't have a deal in March 2019 when we fell out. That doesn't really, you know, that would be damaging, but not catastrophic. The real problem is, we don't have the regulators and we don't have the laws. So at the moment, we've got, say, the European Medicines Agency, or we've got Euratom. These guys are major players. You can't put a drug on the market without European Medicines Agency authorization. Euratom assesses how you deal with nuclear material. You know, this is important stuff. We don't have the regulators to take on those jobs. We need to pass laws to create them. We need to hire staff. We need to put in place systems so that they can operate. We need to train people up. And all of that, especially while you're delivering on the rest of Brexit, is just too much work. So what we'd end up with is a situation where we'd have a black hole in our regulatory infrastructure. Very, very quickly, if that happens, things start falling apart. You can't put new drugs on the market. You don't have the legal authorization for handling your nuclear materials. We, for instance, have an arrangement with the Americans where we give them passenger data under the EU umbrella for all flights that are going to the US. Unless we come up with our own system for that, no one could board those planes. None of this is stuff that you can't do. It's all very, very doable, but you've got to do it. And if you don't do it, you suddenly get extraordinary chaos and sort of humiliation, really, on the global stage. The trouble is the deadline. Because we haven't got time to do all of this before that deadline hits, having a no-deal outcome would be catastrophic for the UK. So this is why it's not a very good threat for the Europeans, because when we make it, they just look at us aghast and think, what are you doing? Like, the gun that you're pointing is pointing at your own head, not us. All happens to us is we lose about 7% of our exports. It's far less severe for us than it is for you. So the only analogy I can think of, David Davis coming up with a bunch of stuff about buying a house and being prepared to walk away, I don't think that's a very good analogy at all. The analogy I would suggest is that it's basically like standing at a cliff edge and saying to your mate, give me that sandwich or else I'm going to jump over the cliff. Now, you might say you've got leverage, but to everyone else, you just look like you're completely insane. And that's how we look to the Europeans.
Ian, that's a brilliant point to sign off, I believe. But I did want to ask you one more question, which purely for my own interest as much as anything. But obviously, the negotiations were scheduled to start on the 19th of June. Before we get to that point, do you have things that you're looking out for, whether they be good signs or bad signs?
Yes, I very much hope that there is any detail being put forward as to how we intend to proceed. For instance, on what we're prepared to give way on in terms of leverage on EU citizens in the UK, or the degree of budgetary contributions that we're prepared to tolerate in the future, or for instance, just having a more pragmatic approach to European Court of Justice jurisdiction. We don't want to be under its auspices, that's fine, but we may be happy to have it in some limited areas like patent law. And that sense of just realism, practicality, pragmatism, rather than the sort of chest beating, sort of quite more emotional nationalist sentiment that we've had for the last year or so, that would be very, very welcome. It would suggest that whatever the Brexit outcomes are, at least it was going to be conducted in a sensible, sober way, rather than the more excited things that we've seen since the vote.
That was Ian Dunt, editor of politics.co.uk and the author of Brexit, What the Hell Happens Now, speaking to me for Jazz FM's Business Breakfast. You can hear the programme every weekday morning from 6 o'clock on Jazz FM.